Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
I'm Doug Doyle, WBGO News Director. Thrilled to be back here at Two River Theater at the Joan and Robert Rechnick's Theater. You might remember, maybe you were in the crowd when we did Ma Rainey's Black Bottom a few years ago. And Ruben Santiago Hudson was on that panel. So tonight, we take you to a different story with different characters who you will love. And let's meet the Creative Brain Trust for Oobla D that will run from June 8th through the 30th, right here at Two River Theater. Joining me is the person who's responsible for this show, the playwright, Golden Globe winner, Regina Taylor. Next, we want to bring up the person who's responsible for the music of this wonderful show, Oobla D, Obie Award winner, Deidre L. Murray. I'm sure a lot of you saw Jitney on Broadway, right? The man responsible for directing that Tony Award-winning show is also a Tony Award-winning actor, and he is no stranger to us here at Two River Theater. Ruben Santiago Hudson. Welcome. Thanks for being a part of tonight's broadcast, which will be aired later on WBGO, the greatest jazz station in the world, I might add. Regina, you have said collecting hits of DNA. I put that into a pot and I mix it up with a liberal dose of creativity and imagination, and that's where the characters start to grow. So take us to Oobla D and put that into perspective on how that all came about for you.
Yes. A friend of mine was taking me to hear her great grand aunt play the piano at the Novotel Hotel in New York City. Afterwards, she came over and talked to us at the table, and a wonderful woman, she must have been in her 70s, and she was telling me about these all-female bands that she used to play with. And I love jazz, but I hadn't heard of any of these women. So I wrote it down and went to the Schomburg Library the next day and started looking up these great players, Mary Lou Williams, Valeda Snow, and then I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do for my next piece in Chicago, and a friend of mine set up a luncheon with all these female players in their 70s, in their 80s, and I started jotting down their stories and putting bits and pieces into this play, which is about women trying to own their own space, trying to own their own voices, to be heard, which is something from the very first moment we take our first breath. It's an issue. So I wanted to write about that. Through the lens perspective of music, these musicians trying to find their voice in this new music, bebop. And as the men are at war, this is the time when you have Rosie the Riveter, the female baseball leagues, and these all-female bands, because women, it was okay for women to play the piano. It was not okay to be plucking strings between your legs, to be slobbering over a horn, and you're way too weak to be playing some drums. So these women were daring to own their own space, find their own way, interpret themselves the way they want to be interpreted in the times of 1946.
In the land of Oobla D, in the land of Oobla D, I met a beautiful princess
in the land of Ubladi.
Ubladi.
She smiled and said, Ubudelia, meaning you appeal to me.
In the land of Ubladi, composed and arranged by Mary Lou Williams, one of the people you just mentioned, for the Dizzy Gillespie Band in the late 40s. Do you remember the first time you heard that song? It's kind of a bizarre song, isn't it?
It's
fun.
In the idea of bebop, it is a little surreal. It's colorful.
Colorful indeed. Deidre L. Murray is the person responsible for the score of Ubladi. Did you know what you were getting into when you started this whole production?
No, but I knew it was about women in jazz, and I'm a woman in jazz, and the answer was going to be yes, thank you, amen.
And you're no stranger to putting together shows involving the music of jazz, and the Running Man had a beautiful score to it, an Obie Award-winning performance for you.
Well, I am a jazz musician, so basically everything that I do is coming from a jazz perspective, whether it sounds like it or not. The way I think about jazz is that it's there are certain rules to it, but it's also a feeling. There's also a psychology to that kind of music. So, and it was interesting. You were talking about Mary Lou Williams. You know, that's part of the Dizzy Gillespie when he went down to Cuba, and they started putting Latin music and jazz together, rumba and all that stuff together. Yeah, yes, that's how that kind of developed.
Why the cello for you?
Because my mother worked at night, and I saw a movie about Betty Davis playing a violin. And I said, I want to do that. And my mother said, no, nothing squeaky. So I said, okay, I'll take the cello.
The director of this play is Ruben Santiago Hudson. You know, you capture the human spirit in all of your shows that you direct. And even when you're acting and you're the playwright, what is it about how you connect? You seem to be able to look inside people a lot better than most of us. Why is that, Ruben?
I don't know. You know, I'm a child of observation. I was a curious kid, and the people that I observed living in a segregated community were people that looked like me. And I was fascinated by the incredible integrity they had, no matter what hardships they faced. And I always wanted to be able to mine that from every character that I saw or directed or interpreted myself. I always wanted to go to the root of that integrity that so impressed me and let me make a way through the world that knew that I was worthy of every inch of space that I took up, because I saw those people elude that kind of wonderful sense of being. And I just thought it was very necessary. And when I see so much work and I see people not understand what's important to people that look like me, I said, well, I guess I have a duty. And so when I direct something, I want to make sure that if I don't get anything else right, I want to get right that we're incredible and magnificent, disdainful, beautiful people. And that's what I try to make sure that I instill in my cast. And that's what I'm always trying to pull out, because it gets so overlooked, because the world knows black people from what other people say we are, whether it's in the history books or on television or in the newspaper. Other people said this about us. I want us to say who we are, so I just challenge my actors to be that.
Now the jitney is over.
No, we're doing a national tour.
But I mean on Broadway. Don't worry, I'm not closing it out on you.
What I'm saying
is, now that you've had the response, right, best revival of a play, as you come now to this show, what do you bring from the feeling you're always dealing with actors and dealing with their situations? Why did you want to do Ubladi?
I've been wanting Ubladi for many, many years, and Regina and I have been crossing and talking passing and talking, and she said, we have to work together. I said, where's Ubladi? I want to take a look at that in a whole different way, in a whole different time, in a whole different place. And she said, well, let's do this. And this is a story that's been so overlooked. Any story that really tells the truth and kind of puts the power of African-American women in perspective, in the great perspective that I have grown up seeing with Nanny Rachel Crosby in Lackawanna and the Rooming House, I saw that impact and that power, and I wouldn't be the man I am without her being the woman she is and teaching me. And so this was a great opportunity to shine a light on those incredible, incredible people that are the rocks and foundations of not only our communities, but of our education, our social activism, our music, and everything else. And this was an opportunity for me to say, if I could just be a part of shining that light, if I can make sure that that'll never be overlooked again. We have these incredible writers and musicians that's doing their part, and where do I fit in? Where's my part? And then I was granted the opportunity to be back at this wonderful theater with these extraordinary artists.
Regina, when you came up with this idea, it's been a while, I mean, since you came up with this whole notion of Ubladi. How has it changed for now the 2019 version of Ubladi?
It's changed in terms of musically filling it out, one. It was a play with music. We would see the journey of these women, and they would play a couple of sets, and that was the music. With this, it is more musicalized in a non-traditional way. And with that, it's been a joy to find where those moments come in where you can't speak it, but you have to sing it. I love that, and I've loved the exploration of that.
Can you give us a short little synopsis without giving everything away about this amazing all-black, all-female jazz band at the end of World War II, and tell us a little bit about the conception and the story itself?
Yes, it is. You have Jendel Soul, and we see her on the road trying to meet up with Evelyn Divine and the Diviners, and she catches up with them in St. Louis. She has to prove herself, and she's a sax player. They just lost their last sax player. She's trying to prove herself that she can blow well enough to earn a spot on the stage with these incredible players. And they're playing this new type of music at the time, bebop, which has moved from swing to bebop. And she has to go through each of the women to earn that spot. And then when she does earn that spot on the stage, she has to find that place within herself that merits her to earn her wings, to find this sound that will be everlasting. I think artists want to be able to find their own voice that is like no one else's. Someone was saying just recently, if you have Tina Turner and she says, hello, you know it's Tina Turner. It's not like me saying hello. It's not like you saying hello. It's Tina Turner's hello. You want to, as an artist, find that sound that is unique and special to yourself. And they're telling her, each one is telling her, in order to earn your wings, in order to get to heaven, you gotta pass through hell. And certainly being an African-American female and trying to find your own voice, find that space, you gotta go through a little bit of hell to get there. So that's basically what the piece is about, her journey in finding that voice. It's also about the times that she's living in, overcoming the times that she lives in. When is the right time to be African-American and female in this world, to be a musician, trying to carve out your own space is what it's about. She has to they keep telling her, get a relationship with time. And we have Mother Time on the stage herself. She is a character that Jen is talking to, because she has to figure out, one, in her playing, how to get in between the beat. And she also has to figure out the times that she lives in order to own her own.
You bring up time. Today was the second rehearsal, I believe, of Ubladi here on stage. So time now moves on, and everyone has to learn their lines and get everything together. I ran into Marva Hicks, who plays band leader Evelyn Waters, and she said, I'd like to be here tonight, but Ruben told us we've got to learn our lines. I know you have a great sense of humor, Ruben, but you demand excellence. Tell us about the whole process of the rehearsal and how's it going.
Well, I love Marva Hicks tremendously, but she did not tell the truth on me. I said, you're welcome to be here. I'd like you to be here, but I'm not making you be here. And she looked at that as a cloaked, you better learn your lines. Listen, I mean, the way I look at my art, I don't have opportunities to squander. I'm not going to half step. I'm not going to almost do anything. Because I don't know the next time they're going to let me be on the stage. I don't know the next time they're going to put a microphone in my mouth or let me sit on the couch. So if you put me up, I'm in. And that's the only way I can go. And I'm going to go all the way in. But I also, that requires space and trust. So I have to build that with my cast. I have to build that with my collaborators. Trust me, believe in me. If you do, I'm going to deliver you in whatever realm it's in. I'm going to deliver you. Do I always succeed tremendously? No, but I'm going to give it my absolute all. My absolute all is the only thing that's required of me. I don't know what almost is. So I demand that from my actors, but the only way that I could demand that is if I give them that. It's reciprocal. I give them as much as they give me. And I said, you got to meet me halfway. But the thing is, inevitably, no matter what music is written, no matter what play is written, no matter what lights are shined or stage is built, someone in the end has to make the final decision. He is the director, and you have to ask yourself, are you up to that task? Are you prepared? Are you ready? And are you up to that task? And I tried to live my life to the point to where at 63 years old, I'm ready. I'm up to it. You just have to believe. And when you come in to see this play, as Regina just explained, it's a lot in this play. And how do I deliver that to you? In a theatrical way. In a wonderfully theatrical way. And all I asked you to do as an audience is to meet me halfway. That's all, you know. Because there's no one way of doing anything, you know, but inevitably, the information that's given from everybody in the room has to come out into one specific event. Y'all follow me? So I need everybody to inform me what that event is going to be, but I also need everybody in that room to trust that I will make the decision that's best for the event. Not the decision that's best for me or you, but for the event that I have planned, that I am working diligently on for you, that I'm going to make the best decision for it.
Ubladi is running June 8th through the 30th right here at Two River Theater in Red Bank, and we're speaking to Ruben Santiago Hudson, Deidre L. Murray, and Regina Taylor. One thing they all have in common is a love of music. I'm going to mention some people. James Brown, Archie Shepp, Henry Threadgill. Deidre L. Murray, you worked with these people?
Yeah, especially James Brown. That was funny. Very amusing, yes, yes.
Tell us a little bit about James Brown.
Hit me.
Exactly. He had a band, right? He had a band with horns and stuff, but he also had like a string quartet for class. And he had, at the time where I used to do gigs with him, he had like a male and female go-go dancer. And what would happen, because I was already a performing jazz musician, I would get in there and I would get happy and stop playing the written music. Mm. You know, and I actually quit after a while because I was so embarrassed. I couldn't stop myself. I couldn't read the music. I was like, yeah, let's go. It was crazy. And then you would turn over there, and then, you know, they were half naked, and you would, I said, whoa, this is good. This is good. So, yeah. So I used to do some gigs with James Brown. Yeah, at the Apollo.
Doing the score for this, musical score for this, has this made you even more immersed in the music of that time period? Do you go home and listen to it more?
No, but you know, if you have to go through all the music, I think you should go through all the music, all the different eras to be a functioning professional jazz musician. So, you know, you need to know the blues, you need to know all those things, you need to, I would say that where my music is based is probably more modern, but all that music, those are the building blocks of all the music that's in jazz, so of course, you know, you'd have to go into it. And I also love the great singers in that era. I also love people like Ben Webster. It's just wonderful music. It's also wonderful singing music, though. The horn players back then kind of sang. The music is constantly evolving and changing. And it's really interesting that you find yourself saying, oh, this is how I got to this decision. Oh, this is why people do this now, because of what happened before.
You bring that up, what happens now. I want to call upon some names that I actually had our morning host at WBGO, Gary Walker. I said, Gary, give me the names of the female artists right now who are at the top of their game. People like saxophonist Tia Fuller, violinist Regina Carter, drummer Terry Lynn Carrington, harpist Brandy Younger, singers Diane Reeves, Catherine Russell, Dee Dee Bridgewater, Cassandra Wilson, Cecile McLaurin-Salvant, and many others. Do they realize, Regina, the struggles that happened back in the time of Ubla Dee? They wouldn't be here. They wouldn't be successes without the struggles, much like the ball players and anybody else has had to go through that. Do you think the artists of today get that?
I think they get that. They understand the struggles of today because it continues.
It's a great point. Yeah, because you do not see enough of, there was a panel discussion that happened in New York City not long ago, and it was a jazz workshop, and they had a panel discussion about women in jazz, and I think there were only two out of the people on the panel were women. So it's like, that's not a good indication of what's going on there. Mm-hmm. What do you want people to think about, Regina, as they leave this theater, seeing Ubla Dee? What would be the comment that one of these people here, because everybody's buying a ticket, right? What would be the comment that you would want to overhear, maybe not directly to you, but overhear, that would make something significant to you?
What are you willing to do to find yourself in this world? How far will you go in order to lay claim to yourself in this world? And the idea that that struggle, we go back and forth in time with this piece. The struggle is not only about 1946, it's also about, it starts right here and now where we are as women, as African-American women, and in general, people trying to own their space. What obstacles do you face, and what are you willing to do about it? And I hope that they enjoy this beautiful production and this gorgeous music.
It's so timely, too, the piece right now with what's happening. You know, more we see the more and more need for women to be able to express themselves. And so it couldn't be a better time, right, to see Ubla Dee?
I think it's a perfect time.
Let's talk about the cast, Ruben. What's special about these individuals you're working with in Ubladi?
It's an extraordinary cast. I mean, at least, look, I mean, Stanley Wayne Mathis, who's been on Broadway I don't know how many times, whether it was OK or Jelly's Last Jam or Book of Mormon, Marva Hicks, who's been on Broadway so many times, Allison Sims, who was the last Diana Ross in Motown, Stacey Sargent, who's up for Drama Desk Award right now as we're sitting here, Monica Palmer, an extraordinary cast, and a young brother came in from LA who's when you see him, you recognize him from a lot of TV and film, Cedric Saunders. Just a monster cast, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention two extraordinary black female jazz players in our band. We have a small band. Half of it is black female jazz players. Corinthia Cromwell on saxophone and Mimi Jones on bass. Both of them have played with Wynton Marsalis's orchestra and many other people. And they will be featured in the play as well. So it's not like we're going to have a panel with no black female artists on there. So those two. But this cast, you know, we just been together 2 days. But when I look around the room, I like to look at some familiarity. I like to look at some things and some people that make me feel comfortable, you know that I'm safe. My choreographer, Ken Roberson, who was in Jelly's Last Jam with me, won a Tony with Avenue Q, did many plays on Broadway and choreographed many, many plays. So I look around, George Caldwell, our music director. These are people that have been around, toured the world with some of the best artists in the world. And for us to have them here at Two River, and they all want to be here or they wouldn't be here. They want to be in this arena with you people and do this play. And we've all, our footsteps were ordered and came right here for this purpose. So I feel, as a director, I'm in director's heaven right now. I mean, that ain't easy when you corral all that talent because they're looking at you like you might know everything. And actually, you're sitting in the director's seat, that don't mean you know everything. I mean, you take all the information and then you cook up that gumbo and you serve it. And so when the director understands that, then they can be a fine director. But this cast, man, and the voices, I forgot to mention Amber Iman, who was in Shuffle Along, Hamilton. These are the people that's on the stage. This is not the understudies in those plays. These are the people that were on stage. And they sing and move and act as good as anybody in the nation.
You know, every time I interview somebody from a show here at Two River Theater, I bring it up. I think everybody in our audience realizes what you just talked about, that great performers love coming to Two River Theater. They talk about the crew they work with. They talk about the people who own this theater. They talk about the people who run this theater. It is a special place at Two River, and when people see Ruben Santiago Hudson, they're comfortable. They know it's going to be a wonderful show. Now, I understand there's going to be two tiers to the set.
I'm not giving away all the secrets. Yeah. I can't give you all that. Listen, but the reason, Doug, the thing that you understand, warmth and hospitality starts from the top. It starts from who runs things. And so, you know, Stephanie Cohen and John Diaz and Michael Hurst, that group of the respect they have for artists is unparalleled. It's amazing. I wouldn't keep cut. When I first came out here, I'll be honest with you, John brought me kicking and screaming. I didn't want to leave the Upper West Side. I said, I ain't going nowhere. I'm too old to be going. So he brought me out here. I have not left. How many times? I have not left. Because that hospitality, that greeting, the warmth that the audience sends back up here to my artists and my actors. I brought Brandon Durden here. He hasn't left. I can't get a job because Brandon's here all the time. I mean, they come here and they work and I said, come with me, come over here, and you're going to be home. And so that's why we come. Every artist needs a home, but we also have to give back to those for their generosity. We owe them something, not just a debt of gratitude, but a total commitment in the work, and then to be loyal to that. You know, they have to extend to us, and we have to extend to them. So I'm grateful for that leadership.
You mentioned Mimi Jones playing the bass in the band. Mimi has done so much for the WBGO Kids Jazz Series, so she's near and dear to our heart at WBGO. You can make your own doors. That's something that you've said, Regina. What doors open in Ubladi?
What doors open in Ubladi?
In the minds of those who come to this theater, mm-hmm. how have you opened their mind with Ubladi? What doors suddenly come a little clearer?
Yes, I think with Jen De La Soul, she is searching for a door, searching for opportunities, and ultimately, if the doors don't open, we have to be able to create it ourselves, to pick up that hammer and create it ourselves. I know that's what my mother taught me. She taught me to write early on. One of my earliest memories was being on the floor with construction paper and crayons and creating these children's books, and I might be 4 years old, creating these children's books that had an African-American girl in the center of it. This was her world through her lens, and it was the greatest gift she gave me to be able to start with a dream and then figure out how to navigate through it and with some hard work and determination to fulfill those dreams, to make those dreams concrete. That's the writing to me. And for me, that's creating doors.
I understand that you moved from Dallas to Oklahoma when you were around 12.
I moved from Dallas to Oklahoma, Muskogee, Oklahoma, when I was about 7 years old.
About seven, okay. Mm-hmm. What was your childhood like growing up?
I lived in the segregated South, if we're talking politically. I lived in the segregated South, and I, at a very early age, integrated school systems. That was very difficult. It was also a wonderful childhood that my mother provided me. She believed in education. I was always with books, places to escape, to travel in terms of time and skin, gender, and other circumstances. That's what I learned about creativity, about the arts, about writing, about so many things that you can create your own worlds. And it starts with you, your own imagination.
Creating the musical score, Deidre, where do you start when you're composing something for a show like this? Where does it start? Where does it start in your head? And then what eventually happens to your hands and your body?
Well, you read the words. And as you read the words, you hear music in your mind. And then, you know,
Do you hum it? Once it's in your mind, what do you do?
No, I hear it in my mind, and I kind of dream on it.
Okay.
And I meditate on it, and as I dream it, I write it out. But I kind of dream it. It's kind of like, you know, you read a poem, and you say, ah, this is what this means. Oh, I know what that sounds like. And you just write it down. And then what you try to do is, once you've written some, you know, vignettes of different pieces, you start trying to put a through line to how they all fit together, so that you can tell a musical story that's in parallel to the story of the playwright.
What was your reaction, Regina, when you first heard what she had done?
Oh, I love Deidre Murray. I love everything about her. I love her from the top of her head to the bottom of her feet. I love her breath. She's brilliant, and she gets this. She has been a musician on the road with a whole bunch of guys, and she's lived it. And so it informs every note that she's written, and I appreciate her contributions to this piece. It moves through me. I've loved opening up this piece. I've loved opening up this piece.
I hear you.
To find new expressions. I'm moved by it. it has been necessary to me as I move through the world even today. And so I want to share that with other people.
What was your first impression of Ruben Santiago Hudson when you met him?
This is years ago, years and years and years ago, when I met Ruben Santiago Hudson, and I saw him, one, on the stage, August Wilson. And I was like, wow, who is this brother? Seeing him on the stage, Jelly's Last Jam, seeing him on the stage. And I remember going, seeking him after a show to talk with him. I wanted to see who this bright light was, this galvanizing, powerful presence, full of boldness and subtleties, an amazing artist. I wanted to know who he was, and so I sought him out.
I laugh when I see you in Billions, by the way, because I know you are so deep. And then I see that character, and I go, people know you, but if they're following the show, they're like, they have no idea what's behind this man. You still enjoy acting?
I just finished 6 weeks of Lackawanna Blues at the Mark Table Forum, which you guys get next year. That's the only place it's going, because I'm too old for that. 26 characters wear you out. I love acting, you know. I love directing. Writing is harder. I just finished a script for Netflix Sunday. It's the loneliest of all my professions. But each of them have their own skill and their own power, and you learn from each of those things. But they're all collaborative in a different way. But as an actor, you collaborate. As a director, you collaborate. And as a writer, you collaborate. You know, so I go where I'm needed. You know, right now I'm needed. And then I also selfishly go, if I've done something enough, I say I'm tired of doing that right now. Like right now, what I need next is a movie. Because I haven't done a movie in 3 years. So I told my agent, you know, when he just called me about something today, I said, movie. I don't want to have that conversation. And they said, nope, movie. Movies next. That's where I haven't been in a while, so I continue to refresh my memory, continue to seek the knowledge that I need to be better as an artist in every medium. So once movie is done, then the national tour jitney, then TV. Then after that, then theater again. And it's just a blessing to be able to reach in and pull out those parts of myself that God has blessed me with. This is not the doing of just some little fella running up to some acting class 101 and being gifted with, it's for a reason, and I'm still seeking out why, and that's why I feel that I have a responsibility to do something, you know, have a voice and say something, do something. What have I done? Is humanity different? Have I done anything? Have I moved anything a little bit because of my art and craft, this power that the creator has given me? What am I doing with it? And so then you get a play like Ubladi. There's a story that's not been told. Now you're doing something. You're actually introducing a world that knows nothing. Most people know nothing about the impact and power. These women took the world by storm, and it was a necessity. I need me a saxophone player when he in the war. Well, I need, get the second guy when he got shot in Germany. Well, what about him? He's a prisoner of war. Well, who you got? I got her. Well, come on, can she play? Yeah, she blew you off the stage. And then it got to the point where, well, who does she know? She knows her. And who does she know? She knows her. Then they got it. Men were managing those groups, and eventually women managed them. What did they need a man for? You know what I'm saying? And it's like, when we as human beings become educated in other mediums and in other people's cultures, we become closer to them. Just because of knowledge, because we're getting information from the source. So when you see these women and these men on this stage doing Regina's play, they're giving you, feeding you, not entertainment only, they're enlightening you. They're teaching and telling and sharing something that's very precious to our culture that hasn't really been shared in this in this way before.
That's what I want you to say in Billions. Well, when Damian Lewis comes somebody, up to you or Paul Giamatti comes up to you, that's what I want you
but
to say.
But then I get in Paul Giamatti's way. And when you're in TV and you got all this stuff that you're hearing me say now, they don't want me saying on TV getting on in the star's way. And people be saying, who is this guy? You know, and this is the money shot over here. So you go in TV, and I can make a living in TV playing an attitude. They don't care about my heart. I have to bring heart to my roles in TV. That's my creation. The writer ain't thinking about me. He don't look like me. He don't know me. He doesn't have somebody like me in his house, never in his life. So how can he write me? So I bring me to it. So if you see something in Billions, because there are great writers on that show, but do they know me? So I have to show you something in a little raised eyebrow or the way I look at him or confidence that is totally my own. And that's hopefully what you can recognize because it's somebody in your family or something you see when you look in the mirror. That's what real good art is, something you can kind of recognize or not recognize and find your way into. Anyway, we're going to get in. That's a lecture later on. We'll have that.
I will say that Lackawanna Blues is just one of my favorite things that you've ever done. Obviously, when it was turned into the movie, I was mesmerized by what was going on in the movie Lackawanna Blues. Of course, most of you do know that Ruben Santiago Hudson was born in Lackawanna, New York, and it's about his neighborhood and about his time growing up. Regina Taylor, Golden Globe winner, actress, playwright, NAACP Image winner. What did that mean to you?
I was deeply honored by the NAACP Image Awards for the roles that I played in terms of creating pieces, and that's what the work is about. A lot of times my work is about creating characters that we know but have never seen. We know them. We've had these conversations with them, but we've never seen or heard them on the stage or screen. That was an acknowledgement that I was a part of putting those characters front and center for people to see and to empathize with. I was totally honored.
The Odd Couple, the old television show, used to have it. Can two men live in the same apartment without driving each other crazy? Can an all-women jazz band take a trip from St. Louis to Chicago without driving each other crazy? What's your thought on that?
I think that in any situation, whether it's male or female, that you have different personalities in a contained space, something might happen.
Deirdre, I want to talk to you a little bit about writing the music for Ubla Dee. Do you remember the first time that you heard The Land of Ubla Dee, and did that come into any play in anything that you were writing?
No, for some reason, I did not know that song. I did not know the tune at all. It was a revelation, especially the beginning, the intro, like the rumba. You know, it was really, I said, wow, that's very interesting. You know, so, no, I didn't know it.
Who do you compare, of the people that you have worked with through the years, who do you compare the people in Ubla Dee, the characters, who do you compare them to? Is there anybody that comes to mind and say, oh yeah, that would be definitely Jin Del Sol? Anybody?
Wow, I have to really think about that. It's interesting, Regina, that in terms of the archetypes, all those people I have met before, but they wouldn't be people that anybody would know. I have to really think about that. Also, interestingly enough, when I was playing earlier, I almost never played with other women. The other women in the band would be either vocalist or pianist, you know, in doing jazz. And so I didn't get a lot of those experiences. I'm just trying to think. Like, especially in like a quartet setting, like a small group setting. I'm not talking about a larger ensemble.
So how did you handle that dynamic, being around all those men? How did they treat you? How did you handle it?
Well, I think in general I was well treated, because I was sort of like, I had two older brothers, and I sort of took the same possibilities, like one for all for one. We were like a team. And I had a big husband. So
that helps.
Yeah, I mean, really, helps. They say, they would say, leave her alone. She's, And I was always music crazy, essentially. And so I was never interested in the ancillary activities, shall we say, that go along. I was just like, they did that, and I would be in my hotel room looking at the band, like the scores, the music. I was never music crazy. I guess that's the best way to describe it. I think I kind of been lucky. I was not hanging around with assholes. I wasn't. So I think I've been pretty lucky on that, score.
Regina, is there a character in Ubladi that reflects you?
All of them. Yes, all of them. With Evelyn being an older artist, finding her way through the industry, what she's been through, to Jen continuing to reinvent, struggle to find that voice that has a resonance. It was, when I was doing the research on these women, what was striking me is that I couldn't find the recordings. I found mentions, people who remembered them, who were still living, who were passing on their names and these experiences, but a lot of times if it's not recorded, no matter how amazing of an artist you might be, you're lost, lost over time. And so that's what I was struggling to find, these women and their journeys and that sound through these archives of the Schomburg Library or through their children and their children's children. It was really wonderful the first time that we did this production, the production of the old Ubladi, which is not this Ubladi. But what I loved was that the women that I talked to were there opening night, and they brought their children and their grandchildren. And they were pointing at the stage and saying, yes, that's me. These bits that I had that were authentically this person, they were pointing, yes, grandchild, that's me, was overwhelming. And then afterwards, at the party, these women, and they're in their 70s, 80s, 90s, got up and they played together. That was such a huge gift. It was a gift to all that were there and witnessed. We didn't have cell phones back then, so... that's something that I carry with me still today.
I'm sure you're like me, because you love to learn, and as soon as people see Ubladi, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go through that whole time period, listen to music, look for things. When I saw Lackawanna Blues, I looked it up, trying to learn more about the neighborhood and everything. Is that what you expect people to do after watching this?
I hope so, yes. I hope that they think about this journey of these female jazz musicians. Still, you're going through to find them. And yes, I hope that people will think about the legacy of these women.
What do you love about the music Ruben, when it comes to jazz and blues? What is it that touches you? So many of the, you know, your productions involve wonderful music from different time periods. What do you love about music?
Well, you know, all my productions, pretty much 90% of my productions were all scored by Bill Sims Jr., who was an ethnomusicologist, and he just loved everything about every era of music. Unfortunately, he passed in February, and then I was fortunate to now have Deidre. But the people that I work with are always people who are extremely passionate about music, because for most people, music is a time clock of their life, and there's certain songs that take you back to places in your life that you remember, and they elicit certain memories and certain feelings and certain ideas that you had. And I think music is, particularly in African American life as well, bebop was the jazz musician's Declaration of Independence. It was the first time they can come from behind anything and anybody and any note and actually be free, totally free. So I always, that's my phrase, if you ever use it, I want money. But bebop was jazz musician's Declaration of Independence. It was like, we're free. You know, I'm gonna play what I want, how I want, when I want it, the way I want to play it. We came out of swing in the bop. So swing was very, you know, you knew just where that second step was gonna come when you're dancing. And you find that in bebop. You know, so I always felt that to have you must have the absolute correct music for the task that you got that you have at hand. The show that I'm doing, I can't have incorrect music. That's why when I did Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, that band was musicians from Winton's band and several other bands playing that music, because Ma Rainey had Sidney Bechet and Louis Armstrong and 15-year-old T-Bone Walker and Fletcher Henderson as the band leader and Thomas Dorsey went before Fletcher. And so why would I have five musicians on stage talking about bomb, 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 bomb? No, I had them cats playing. You know, I had my actors mime it out like it was the real deal, but she had the best musicians in the world. So if you want to really do that play right, the music better be the best music in the world from the best musicians in the world. So I can't have a bunch of actors trying to figure out how to play the trombone. And that's the reason when people ask me why I recorded the music, because I had bad musicians recording, like my had, the best of their time. So music is such a very important part, because one note can say do a whole monologue. We do one note to start out a certain song, and once you hear that note, and the thing about Deidre's music is she don't overwhelm you with it. She sets the stage and lays the blanket, and she makes you lay on it, and then she wraps you in it. And it's like, and then it's a different way of doing things. It's storytelling. Music is storytelling, and when you have extraordinary music with a wonderful play, that marriage together, you just have to find out where they intersect, how they meet, and how they don't get in each other's way, but complement each other.
You know how all of you have mentioned the importance of knowing the history of these ladies in Ubladi. How many people know the name Norma Miller? Norma Miller was the last survivor of the Lindy Hoppers in Harlem. She just passed away. She was 99. You know, she came to the radio station several times. And I just feel like when I meet people like that or hear them speak, because I just put a piece together in her interview with Gary Walker back in 2010, the spirit that she had, she said, I was 12 years old and Twist Mouth George found me. He saw me dancing outside of the Savoy and he brought me in. And she says, you know, when I was 14, I won the Lindy Hop contest at the Apollo Theater. I don't think my feet ever touched the floor. You know, she still was so vibrant. It would be a shame if we didn't remember people like that, and we didn't have. So a tribute to you and all of you for bringing to life these people who, as you said, we might have to look a little bit harder to find out. About Norma Miller, did you know anything about Norma Miller?
Yes.
Did you get a chance to meet her?
No, I didn't meet her. But yes, and I read about her too. I was very happy that they were writing about her now as she passed.
It's so important for us to get that information out. I mean, we try to do it at WPGO. When it comes to jazz, Deidre, A lot of people say, you know, you don't have as many outlets for jazz. Does that hurt you to know that there's not as many places to go to find this wonderful music?
That's such a big question.
And you have 2 seconds. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I mean, I will always love the music, but the culture and music evolves and changes. So, like the great R&B singers, the great blues singers, so all these things can exist at the same time. Of course, I want more venues for jazz and jazz musicians, and I want more women being known as, you know, great players of the music. So it's you know, I just think we need to hold on and, you know, and revere our music and our culture. That's what I think. So, you know, when you think of somebody like Aretha Franklin, for instance, who just, you know, died, I mean, we need to hear that as well. I mean, not only in church, but we need to hear that everywhere. And we need to hear all these other people everywhere. So, you know, I'd like to see music on television, you know. I would like it like when you talk to, you know, some, you know, young people, that if you say, you could say Miles Davis and they don't know who he is at this point. So, I mean, I just, you know, I think we should revere music, of course.
It's one of the reasons why I'm so excited about seeing Ubla D. Ruben Santiago Hudson, final thoughts on this production?
My final thoughts is that I got to get in the room and do some work tomorrow. I mean it's just, I'm excited about it, you know. I'm excited to bring this to you and for you to experience this. Regina's work is incredible, and Deidre's work is incredible, and I just feel fortunate to be, you know, for them to put it in my hands and say, okay, Captain, lead us through. I like that responsibility. I'm up for the task, and it's just an honor. It is truly an honor to be back here at the Two River Theater and to bring this work to you.
One of the best Manhattan School of Music's ever produced, Deidre L. Murray, final thoughts?
Come see the show. I think you'll love it.
Well said. Once again, it will be June 8th through June 30th that it will be running here at Two River Theater at the Joan and Robert Rechnix Theater where we are at right now. Regina, obviously this is your baby. So as you see this all coming together, what do you want to tell our audience tonight?
I feel blessed. I feel blessed to have the opportunity of presenting this piece and sharing it with you. Please come, bring your friends, bring your family, tell everyone about it. Thank you.
I do want to mention that Jazz Arts Summer Jazz Cafe is every Friday and Saturday night right here at Two River Theater through the month of July. And I want to thank my panel for tonight. You know, it's such an honor to be, I mean, if we mentioned all of your achievements, the show would have been over as soon as we started. So I hope people got a sense a little bit more of what's inside all of you during tonight's panel discussion. So Ruben Santiago Hudson, Deidre L. Murray, and Regina Taylor, thank you so much for Ubla D.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you.
Thank you.
I will echo what Regina said. Please come and see this wonderful production. You will be able to hear this panel discussion on WBGO, and that will be coming up on May 18th, and we'll get you more information about that. But thanks again. I'm Doug Doyle from WBGO, wishing you a pleasant evening, and we'll see you back here at the theater.